I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Jones. Bowden. He's got it. England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins.
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match.
Hello, welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket, and our nerves have been eased by England's slightly uncertain victory over Sri Lanka. I mean, it does look all right on paper, a four-wicket victory, but it left it till the last couple of balls to secure. And, well, it's just like the 2019 World Cup all over again, isn't it? The kind of ebbs and flows and rather nervy victories as you get to the knockout stages. But they got there. And it's a total reversal, I was thinking, Simon, of England-Sri Lanka encounters of, say, 10 years ago in the World Cup, where Sri Lanka totally dominated and England got hammered by 10 wickets, I think, in one game. And so it's good to see England now really sort of starting to assert their authority.
It was nervy, you're right. It just looked impossible for them to lose the game from the position they were in. And then the doubts crept in. I thought actually Ben Stokes just assessed the situation really well and played his best T20 international innings for England. I mean, it's been actually quite slim pickings for him. He came in after that opening stand because he's bumped up the order because of the injury to Milan. He came in with England in a, you know, impregnable position, it seemed, and he scored 42 not out of 36 balls with 2 fours, which doesn't look stunning. But what he did was, I thought, is he totally adapted to the situation. He read the conditions. He read the situation of the match. He understood the potential pitfalls for England if they just played lots of shots, and he calmly and just steered them to victory, really. He kept his nerve, whereas one or two others, I thought, frittered positions away. I thought Livingston's shot was a poor one. I thought Moeen Ali's was, just loose. And it just needed a bit of batten down the hatches, really, and just knock the ball around. Old school, in a way. Sometimes the old school does work, especially on pitches and in situations like that.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Because it was less than a run a ball required once the openers had done the damage. And, I suppose playing T20, you still get kind of sucked into playing the big shots, or thinking after three or four balls of singles and the odd two, you've still got to play the big shot. Actually, you don't. But then again, there's also that sort of thought in the back of your mind that you don't want to leave it too late. You don't want to leave it to the lower order to suddenly bail you out if a couple of wickets fall. So there is a view, I guess, in T20, get it finished. But actually, you're right. There was some tame dismissal. I thought Harry Brooks' dismissal was a bit tame. Mm. And I was thinking to myself, Harry Brooks should watch how someone like Liam Livingstone now approaches an innings, because I feel that Livingstone, when he first came into the T20 side, was a bit frenetic and tried to do everything in the first five balls and usually got out. And Harry Brook seems to be doing that himself. He's up the wicket, first or second ball, trying a reverse sweep, things like that, instead of just settling himself or watching Joss Butler and how he tries to play himself in. And I was thinking, Liam Livingstone's learned his lesson, you know, and he today started a little bit more sedately, and then he played a wild shot. So it take the lessons and the kind of the approach takes quite a lot of sinking in. Butler's got it, Stokes has got it, Moen still has the annoying habit of a tame dismissal, a sort of lollipop catch to extra cover, when really he should be doing better than that. But who's to criticise Moen? He's such an amazing guy, and I'm sure he'll come good in the next game.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? About, you know, T20 is all about sort of pressing the accelerator and being positive and taking the aggressive option. I can understand that, but there are times when you have to play the conditions, because the conditions really do dictate. And I thought that England didn't get that quite right in that second half of their innings, when suddenly there was just a sort of hint of problem. And, you know, it wasn't an easy pitch on which to bat on. It wasn't really coming on. And some of the shots they played, you think, you know, there is more than one way to win a game, and I think Stokes showed that today. It was low risk cricket, and once they just lost a couple of wickets, it did look like the best way to approach it was a sort of quite a low risk approach. If you took the aggressive option, then you were likely to get yourself into trouble, and so it proved. The one person I would excuse, it's not the right word, but I thought was fine. I mean, was Sam Curran. The shot he took on, you know, he was expecting the short ball, and, you know, he could have ducked, but he went for it, caught on the rope, you know, another yard, whatever, it would have been six, and that would have been the game done. So, you know, you could say, well, he was caught on the boundary. But I just felt there was a bit of a sort of lack of clarity in some of England's thinking in that middle order. And here's another thing, Yozza, you know, you talk about Harry Brook, and we have said, and we have seen it, we think that he is an exceptional player in the making, and he, you know, he's not had a great time of it in Australia. But in a situation like that that England were in when Brook came out to bat, okay, he wasn't under tremendous pressure, but in a situation like that, who can you think of who's not in this England squad who you would have preferred to come in when Harry Brook walked the middle? Can you think who I'm thinking about?
You're not thinking about a certain Joe Root, are you?
I am, yeah. That is, in that situation, Root would have just nailed that game down, wouldn't he? The England would have won that by seven wickets. You know, he and Stokes would have finished that game off. So, but yeah, obviously, you know, you can only pick 15, and you know, generally speaking, you go for those really aggressive players in T20. But there are occasions when someone of the quality of Root would be hugely beneficial. And it's been an interesting World Cup in one sense. The rain has ruined it a bit. It's an interesting World Cup because the batters have not had it all their own way, have they? They've had to work hard. And in most games, the bowlers have been in it. It's not been a turkey shoot. It's been hard work. And you think in situations like that, it's not just been swinging through the line and heading for the hills. You've needed a bit of craft, guile, thought, skill, and England's, you know, one of England's best batters ever is not out there. But, you know, I suppose in Test cricket he's not had a great record in Australia. Anyway, it's a slight aside. England are in the semi-finals, Yoz. And in a way, it's a perfect day for an England cricket supporter, isn't it? England have got through to the semi-finals. At the same time, they've said ta-ta to Australia.
Yes, absolutely. I bet there were some Australian fans in the crowd tonight egging Sri Lanka on at all times, weren't there? I like your point about Sam Curran. There's a man with an old head on young shoulders who just seems to always have the measure of how to play it. And yeah, he was a little bit unlucky. I thought he was approaching it absolutely right with Stokes towards the end of that run chase. And he bowled so well again, didn't he? And actually, credit to the bowlers, the England bowlers, who I think really won that game. Because after 10 overs, Sri Lanka looking pretty dangerous. Obviously, the first few overs, they got off to a flyer. But then England pulled it back. And in the last five overs, Sri Lanka scored only 25 runs. The last four overs, only 21 runs. Fantastic effort by Wood, by Wokes, by Curran. Rashid in the middle of the innings, also excellent. He was man of the match, which I like to see that, actually, because so often he bowls those crucial overs, doesn't get many wickets, but batsmen are quite tentative against him. and he doesn't get the recognition. And obviously this time in this game he has. But Curran, again, leading the way with the way England bowled in that last sort of four or five overs. Very good wide Yorkers, slower balls, mixing it up. He just looks very clear in what he's seeking to do. He obviously wants to be involved in those moments. He's a fledgling Stokes, isn't he? Because Stokes loves those critical moments in matches. And so clearly does Curran. Well, that all bodes well for the semi-final, which we think is against India at the Adelaide Oval on Thursday.
Well, it's not been confirmed, but I mean, I think most people would expect India to beat Zimbabwe on Sunday and qualify as group winners. And if that happens, yep, all roads, it seems, point to Adelaide. I've been looking to sort of find, you know, what the configuration is on, you know, on all the sort of fixture lists, looking around, scouting it out. But it seemed quite vague, you know, who plays who where. It's not so much who plays who. We know that the one group winner plays the other runner up. But I'm trying to find, you know, which teams are going to play where. And nothing's been obviously sort of published that I can see. But anyway, it seems as if, I heard Agus say it on the radio this morning, I heard NASA say it on the TV, that England will go to Adelaide. So we can presume by that England, India and Adelaide seems the most likely. And we also think the most likely scenario is South Africa against New Zealand in Sydney on Wednesday, so as the two semi-finals. But of course, there's still some cricket to play yet, and that could change. But I think most people would expect India to beat Zimbabwe, and most people would expect South Africa to beat the Netherlands. There have been one or two upsets in the competition, but that's how it's looking. Our last podcast, I think we said, didn't we, New Zealand, England, India, South Africa, and nothing that's happened this week. And just looking ahead to the matches on Sunday, you'd expect those four to be through to the semi-finals. So do you think England would prefer playing in Adelaide rather than Sydney? I know they just played in Sydney, but sort of a gripping pitch, difficult to score, sort of low scoring. Adelaide, you feel, might offer a bit more to England's batting lineup, then it might offer quite a lot more to India as well. I mean, do you think it's probably the toughest game England could have in the semi-final of the likely qualifiers?
Yes, I suppose it is. I think they'd certainly fancy New Zealand more than they'd fancy India. South Africa, they could probably handle as well. I mean, South Africa's batting isn't that great. I mean, it's all right, but it's not incredible. So obviously their bowling is pretty good. I mean, India are the danger team, I reckon. I think they're probably, they and England are probably the two best teams. South Africa would argue against that as well, I suppose.
Well, I'm sure, and New Zealand as well.
And New Zealand would maybe. It's all so tight, isn't it? It's really difficult to distinguish between the teams. The Adelaide Oval is a very odd ground in its shape. Pretty short square boundaries, brilliantly exploited by Rashid Khan. I mean, you know, Afghanistan weren't far away from winning that game against Australia the other night with a bit more of Rashid Khan, another few balls of Rashid Khan, even a couple of mishits that went for six instead of two, and they would have got there. And it is a funny ground for hitting sixes. Square of the wicket, pretty short, and then long straight boundaries. So it's hard to know which team that suits better. I would say possibly England, because they have got those blokes like Livingston, Butler, Moeen, you know, who like hitting over mid-wicket and are very good at that, picking up, even Hales. Hales is a very strong hitter of the ball, square, over mid-wicket, over long, so wide, long on. So, yeah, I mean, those guys can clear the boundary easily, and the pitch is pretty good. So it will be tough for the Indian bowlers, I reckon. It's going to be potentially going to be a high-scoring game.
Yeah, you'd think it would like to be higher scoring than the one in Sydney anyway, certainly from the surface that we saw today. I mean, they'll probably come up with a new pitch, won't they, for the game? And this was the third match being played on this surface, so it's sort of hard to judge. You end up with a fresh pitch, then you know, the batters can profit, can't they? But I mean, what you've generally found is that in Sydney is that the teams batting first have done well. And normally in T20, you often think of the teams batting second doing well. Certainly it was the case in the UAE last year that, you know, you won the toss, you barely thought about it. Yeah, you bat second. In Sydney, it looks like you bat first. And England bucked the trend today just in the end. It was a curious game. You talk about the halfway stages. Sri Lanka were 80 for 2 after 10 overs. England were 86 for 2 after 10 overs. And both innings sort of nosedived after that. And it was a struggle for batters. Can you just explain to our listeners why that would be the case? You think, you know, OK, it should be straightforward for England from here. It should have been straightforward for Sri Lanka, you know, to post, if you felt, you know, 160, something like that. And that might have taken some getting, 160, 170.
I think it's quite simple. I think the new white ball slides onto the bat pleasantly and it bounces quite consistently. As soon as it's got a bit old, it's got a bit scuffed, it's not quite as hard and perfectly round and shiny, it sticks in the pitch a bit more and makes the timing of the ball that much harder. Also, the spinners tend to bowl more overs. You know, at the beginning, the spinners' deliveries will tend to slide onto the bat, but as the ball gets a little older, it will grip a bit more. And I think also the opening batsmen have the benefit of a bit more time. They can assess the conditions, play their own game for sort of four or five balls just to try and get a bit of timing going and then start playing. Whereas the middle order, with less time potentially to play themselves in, have got to get going straight away with the ball just slightly holding and not coming onto the bat quite as consistently. And it's just those little tiny margins, which means often that you hit a shot which against a new ball just clears the man or maybe goes over the ropes for six, and middle of the innings it doesn't quite clear the man and lands in a person's lap at long leg or long on, as happened to Sam Curran.
Yeah. Sri Lanka could play with a bit of freedom today as well, because the result wasn't the be-all and end-all for them. They haven't had a great record against England recently. They haven't beaten them since 2014 in T20s. And I thought they were quite free at the start as well, and they took it on. England didn't bowl. I didn't think England bowled particularly well. The sort of tone was set. Ben Stokes bowled a long hop, second ball that was lifted away for six over fine leg. Mark Wood was hit for a couple of sixes as well in his opening overs. And Sri Lanka were off to a fly. And I was thinking, actually, you know, 32 for no wicket after three. The history of this ground, in the recent history of the ground in the T20, that if England were going to be set 170, then that would actually be really difficult for them. The Sri Lanka with their spinners could really squeeze them, and it's sort of almost worked out like that in the end. But a curious game. And England were bounding along, wasn't it? I mean, 75 for no wicket. They were 70 for no wicket after six overs of the power play. It's amazing, isn't it, how the game came down to the last over. Even with the conditions, even with the Sri Lanka spinners, a situation like that, you wouldn't have expected necessarily for that to happen. But it wasn't that dissimilar in a way from the game England started the tournament with against Afghanistan, where it got a bit tighter today, but they crept over the line.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
What do you make of this England T20 side? I mean, they've made the semi-finals. They've done it again. Where are their strengths and weaknesses, do you think? Or where are the weaknesses? I think we know some of their strengths, don't we? In their players like Butler at the top of the order, Hales, that sort of dynamism, and Livingston and Moeen Ali when he has his day. Where are their weaknesses, do you think, Goz, that semi-final opponents can exploit?
Well, the seam bowling is a bit hit and miss. Chris Wokes usually bowls a good first over, but hasn't done actually in this tournament. And then later in the innings, he can go for runs. So Wokes is probably going to be a target. I think Wood is a bit frustrating because he does take wickets, but he also tends to go for quite a lot of runs. I think he should use his slower ball more. You know, when you're bowling 96 miles an hour, batsmen are not looking for the ball at 80 or 76 or something. And I think he could mess them up a lot more than he does. And actually, it's interesting. He was talking on the podcast we did yesterday about working on things like that. He still hasn't quite got the confidence to use the slower ball more, which I think would just cut down his economy rate. At the moment, his economy rate is about 8.2, 8.3, which is quite high. It's not easy being a quick bowler, but his consistency isn't quite there. I think Sam Curran's obviously brilliant. I suppose the other thing is second spinner. They haven't used Moen much. Liam Livingstone will go for 8 or 9 and over. He's a good sort of alternative option. I think it's that fifth bowler, isn't it, really? Stokes, and whether it's Moen a couple of overs or whether it's Livingstone a couple of overs. It's the fifth bowler and the third seamer, as in Wokes, really. Curran for me, Wood, excellent, with a bit more variety maybe to throw in for Wood. Wokes, a little bit hit and miss. Rashid, very good. I think people are starting to read his variations a bit better than they used to and sort of kind of know what he's about a bit more now. So he has gone for a few more runs. He's still bowling well, but he's not quite taking the wickets that he has in the past. So, you know, they've got three good bowlers there and then two or three that are perhaps not so good. I'd say that's the weak area. And, yeah. And obviously in the batting, Harry Brook hasn't fired. Maybe he could be replaced by Phil Salt, perhaps, as someone else, a firework in you know, at number five or something, maybe. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I think on that, to me, it looks, though, I can't see how Milan's going to play the next game. I mean, where he pulled up with that groin injury, I mean, they probably don't recover in time, groin injury. Like that. It looks as though he pulled something in his groin, unless it was a bit of cramp. I mean, he was only in the field for, I think, what was it? It wasn't that long, really. So I don't think it could have been cramp. So you'd think that Salt would come in for Milan. Or it may be that they replace David Milan in the squad as well. That's the other thing.
Here's a clarion call for Joe Root, then.
well, they've got three backup players out there, haven't they? So that's not going to happen. But, yeah, and it's very hard to just suddenly come in and pick things up. So they've got three replacement players out there. Yeah, I would have thought Salt comes in for Milan and in England stick to the same team. And that's been one of the interesting aspects of it, is that at the start of the tournament, you think that they might have mixed and matched a bit, you know, rotated, but actually they pretty much kept the same team throughout the tournament. That's going to change now, I would have thought, with Milan out. Wood went off the field, didn't he, as well?
Yeah, but he looked fine. I mean, he
did come back,
fine.
Yeah.
He looked fine.
Yeah, he did come back. And then Ben Stokes is hobbling the whole time. Ben Stokes is hobbling the whole time.
But he's running those twos fine, and yeah. You know, we're talking 20 over games here. We're not talking 5-day tests at the moment, are we? So he'll manage to hobble his way through. It's probably his leg is being held together by sticking plaster and pins and stuff and lots of injections. But he bites on the bullet, doesn't he, for his country, impressively. So, yeah, so that even more explosive power then, if Salt comes in at number three to follow on from Butler and Hales, wow. And actually Salt, of course, played for the Adelaide Strikers.
That's right, yeah, he knows the Adelaide Oval well.
I've seen some pretty good innings he played at the Adelaide Oval. He knows it very well, so that would be a good replacement.
Yeah, not easy coming in for a semi-final against India. I mean, presumably there'll be tremendous Indian support at the Adelaide Oval as well. But, you know, coming in for a big game like that, coming in a bit cold after not playing in the early part of the tournament. Although he did experience some of that in Pakistan, didn't he? Where he played well and he impressed in Pakistan. So, you know, not a bad option to have coming into the side. We mentioned Liam Livingstone's shot today. We should, before we wrap up, mention the catch that got England, that lifted England actually, got England back in the game. We talked about England's, some of England's weaknesses, potential weaknesses. One of their areas where they're not, they don't look weak actually, is their fielding and their catching. And Livingston's catch, I thought, was absolutely vital today. He just lifted the mood for England. Kusal Mendes is, you know, quite dangerous. He tried to pump Wokes out towards the deep square leg boundary. Didn't quite get enough of it. It was the big boundary. And Livingston made a very difficult catch. Looked so easy, sliding on his knees. And he just sort of held the ball up to the crowd as well. Whether he's being barracked out there, I'm not sure. But it was almost like, okay, yeah, you can shout and holler, but look what I've just done. He sort of held the ball up in a very understated way. And that has been, you know, one very good aspect of England's play in this tournament, has been their catching.
And another little indication of Livingston's growing maturity in a way, because I remember on one of his first England outings, the rare occasion we played a one-day international at Taunton, he dropped an absolute goober at deep mid-wicket. It was his first or second game. And he just was far too casual and dropped this easy catch at sort of deep mid-wicket and also didn't make any runs. But in a way, you want catchers to be relaxed, don't you? Because that definitely gives you more chance of taking the difficult catches than if someone's tense and they've got hard hands. He has got a lovely, soft pair of hands which can grasp those difficult chances. And the fact that he doesn't panic and he just gets himself into position and then takes it in perhaps his own idiosyncratic way is something to behold. And he is a big asset. Isn't Stokes an incredible athlete as well? Mm. In the outfield, throwing himself around, hurling the ball off balance in mid-air. I mean, he's a one-man circus act, Ben Stokes, in the field. He's incredible.
Yeah, I'm slightly surprised to hear that Adil Rashid was named player of the match, because I thought Stokes' innings in difficult circumstances under sort of growing pressure actually was excellent today. You know, it was a sort of ruthlessness about it, well judged. And, you know, he also took 1 for 24 in his three overs. He also fielded superbly as well. He caught Dananjaya de Silva. So, that, you know, there was a sort of all-round display from Stokes, although you're right in a sense that Rashid's bowling, his four overs, 1 for 16, it squeezed Sri Lanka, didn't it? It put the pressure back on, and perhaps it led to, you know, it led to wickets elsewhere and Sri Lanka's subsidence. It was a sort of peculiar innings. It's not often you see a match where a team scored 25 for 5 off the last 5 overs in a T20 match after building a good base. They did it on against New Zealand, didn't they, England? Remember the 16th and 17th overs? They really squeezed New Zealand, and their death bowling was very good in that match, and it was pretty good today as well. And just about they've sneaked into a semi-final, which looked a bit improbable, didn't it, after the defeat by Ireland, which is, you know, a woeful performance, really.
Just like the experiences of the 2019 World Cup, of course, where England almost scraped through to the semi-finals and then looked very strong once they got there by hammering Australia. And I like your segue there, introducing the Ben Stokes all-round performance, because he's going to be featuring very much on TV over the next 3 days in our World Cup 2019 documentary, The Greatest Game, which is airing on Sky as we speak. It's on Sky Sports Cricket today, Saturday from midday, and then also on Sky Sports Cricket tomorrow, Sunday, and also on Sky Documentaries on Sunday and Monday at 5 p.m. and 9 p.m. on Monday. And here's just a line about why Stokes is able to handle those big moments.
I've always said that people in sport, if they say they're not nervous about a big occasion, they're just talking out their ass.
So that's a line from the film. In fact, it's the first line in the film. And what it says is that, yes, you are going to be nervous in big moments, but it's how you handle those nerves which counts. And he's clearly very good at it, isn't he?
Absolutely. Well, today he showed that sort of World Cup final steel, I thought. And what I thought about it was that it was, he worked out what he needed to do. That if he played the big shot, I was mentioning earlier, if he played the big shot, that was risky. He only hit 2 fours. It was a conservative innings, but it got the job done. And if one or two of his colleagues had been able to just show the same sort of discipline and play that way, then England wouldn't have quite have had that nervous finale. I mean, it did come down to the last couple of balls. I mean, they won with 2 balls to spare. Chris Wokes hitting that ball for 4. And he's a man for a crisis as well, isn't he? He's sort of calm, experienced cricketer. And well done to him as well, because his heart must have been pumping a bit after he missed the ball before. It just, you know, these things build up, don't they? It just gets down to the last few balls. So just one final question for me, Yoz. Are you proud of this documentary? Are you happy how it's turned out?
Do you know, actually, that's a lovely question, and I am. I think it's really a beautiful piece of work, and I can't claim that much credit for it. It was sort of my idea, and I worked on the creation of it, but the execution has been very much the director, Ashley Gething, who was featured on our podcast yesterday, and also the editor, Owen Davis, who has worked on a number of football films, but never a cricket one before. And they have just crafted this beautiful, layered piece of cinematic art, really, which I think really grasps many of the cricket's great values. The fact that it's an individual game within a team sport, the beauty and brutality of the game in equal measure, the diversity and inclusivity and range of different characters that the game throws up, and also the drama that the game can produce from nowhere. So I really am happy that we've captured, I think, all those essences in this film. I think it is a glorification of the game of cricket as much as it is a representation of a fantastic match, the final in 2019. So I'm very pleased with it, actually, and hopefully everybody who sees it will be too.
Well, I've seen it in rough cut, I think. I don't know whether how much it's changed since I saw it a while back.
Well, if you see it in a big cinema or on a big screen with proper sound, I think you'd be very impressed. And actually, one thing we did do, which I'm really pleased about, is that we spent some extra time recording special sounds for the film. I took my sons, Billy and Callum, down to Wormsley last year to the John Paul Getty Ground with a special sound man. And we did all the kind of types of sounds you're going to get in the World Cup final. Obviously, hits of the ball, balls on stumps, catches with the microphone very close to the catcher. Ben Stokes's dive and the ball ricocheting off his bat for four overs, we actually replicated that. There's a little post I've done on my Twitter feed showing how we recorded that for real and got the sound really animated and kind of
amplified. Amplified.
amplified is the correct word. And you notice that if you watch this film with good sound, you will notice how the sounds of the game are really brought to life. And, you know, it's a bit like I've always said about nature films, you know, the great Attenborough films or whoever has produced them. If they have no sound, they haven't got nearly the same, probably less than half the impact. I mean, the vision is obviously amazing, but if you don't have those extra sounds that really bring a tiger walking through the grass, kind of, you know, try and pouncing on an animal, or even insects, you know, in the trees, grasshoppers scratching their legs, or birds, or, you know, whatever, they add a huge layer to those films by the post-production of the sound. So, you know, they'll often create the grasshoppers rubbing his legs together with two tea bags rubbed together in the studio. So all those sounds are added later to those nature films, and that's what really makes them magnificent. And we tried to do the same with this. And I think cricket is something that, you know, when you watch it from far away in the stand, or even watch it on telly with stump mics and things, still the sounds of the game are not quite as represented as they are if you're actually playing. You know, the first experience I remember ever having was watching Imran Khan bowl, luckily from the non-striker's end. And by the way, I hope Imran Khan is okay after that awful assassination attempt in Pakistan, shot in the leg. But seeing him run into bowl is one thing from a distance. Experiencing it from the non-striker's end, which I did, is just incredible, because there's the pounding of the feet, the huge leap into his delivery stride, the amount of sort of energy you can feel from the body, and the ball smacking into the pitch at 90 miles an hour, and then it's sort of searing past the batsman's head. And of course, I had the misfortune to then have to face it as well. And that just adds a huge ingredient to the experience of facing fast bowling, which we tried to get into this film to try and bring that whole sort of almost sort of hideous experience to life a bit more.
The only problem with the film, Yoz, is we know what the end is.
Well, we do with James Bond, don't we? But it still does all right at the box office.
Okay, well done, Yoz. I mean, you sort of slightly underselled yourself. I mean, I know it's a team. It's a huge team, isn't it, when you put something like this together. But you know, your idea, you put the interview, you did a lot of the interviews for the programme as well. So, yeah, you've had a big role in it. I hope it's a huge success, and I really hope that people enjoy it. In about a week's time, you might need to make another one, mightn't you? Although there's a lot to go, isn't there, for England to win this tournament. But, first things first, they're in the semi-finals where they face a potentially really tricky match, as you'd expect in the semi-final, really tricky match against India next Thursday, we think, in Adelaide. Well, we'll be back next week to have a look at the big semi-finals that are coming up in this T20 World Cup. But England have done it and Australia are out. Goodbye for now.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.